Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. Welcome to the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie!
So hello, and welcome to episode 37. We're getting bigger.
Yeah, you know, I've never had a 37.
Have you not?
That is the one I need to complete a full house of 30s.
Have I had a 30? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've had a 37. In fact, now I have. Go on.
That was what I wanted to do when we were on Elstow 1. You know, all those years back, get the full house, but never did.
No.
God knows how many different 32s I've had. My first four 30s were 32. The 37 eludes me. I won't even mind a spawned out 40 at 37.
I think I've had them all. I'm trying to get the full house of 40s. And
oh, don't show off.
I think I had 41, 42, not sure about 43. Definitely had 44, 45, 46, 48. I've not had 49, not had 47. I'm not sure about 43. It's possible. I've had a 47. That rings a bell. Don't know. Like I say, showing off. I'm climbing way up the 50s as well, to be fair.
Oh, don't show it off and then you get into 50s.
Yeah, I've got a few of them as well.
Yeah, I've got a clean slate. Something I hope to change by the end of this season.
Yeah, you can very possibly do that. You've been ill this week, haven't you? Still sounding a bit bunged up.
Yeah, still a bit rough. I think it's been the Ebola. I'm not sure which strain.
Not bird flu.
No, bird flu's for wuffs. Wuff. No. Yeah, wusses.
Wusses, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have bird flu in Yorkshire. We just kicked it out. But we let Ebola in because it don't kill any of us up here. We just, you know, bit of a sniffle and we're off.
Yeah.
No, I'll be honest, it's not been much fun. I actually tweeted last week on the Monday, you know, lots to do, feeling a bit crap, but going fishing anyway, and that was the full intention. I got the car like half loaded up and I put it back in the garage and went to bed. I just went under. And I really, really do hate being ill. And even, you know, still went to work, you know, on Wednesday and just drank. I've got a cup in front of me now. I've been on the green tea. I'm back at it.
I got ill for a day actually this week. I've not been fishing either, but yeah, I had a really weird bug, one I've never had before. I had some toast in the morning and then got a pain across my belly, like really bad pain, and all my skin went sensitive, like tingly.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was weird, and it was a bit better the following day, but I basically, I went out, I had to do a couple of things, I ended up in bed for the whole next day, and improved a bit, and the day after it was gone. It was like a really, really weird, I wasn't like, you know, I had nothing in my head, it was, you know, it wasn't like a cold or anything, it was just real bad pain, across her belly, and but it was gone.
Sounds a bit weird, but you know what I'm not looking forward to though?
Yeah.
Going back to work tomorrow morning, because I don't know if you've seen, but you know Sonu have put these new little dip things out called Lava. Then they are, they're really, really thick. I'm showing someone the acryl one on the counter today. I showed them the F1 one, and you tip the bottle upside down. It's like the old Heinz sauce advert. It just doesn't come out. It is really, really thick. So I've opened the krill one and done exactly the same. And krill stinks, only this one was a little bit runny. It came out and left a blob on the counter. So the shop is going to absolutely stink when I get there in the morning.
Oh dear.
I'm glad my nose is blocked.
Hope to be fishing next week. I'm going to try and get out Monday to our little secret lake. That should be the plan. But yeah, that's it. I haven't got any fishing stories from this week. That's pretty much it. Had caught a few fish on the net. We had a little spar with somebody we mentioned last week who decided to name himself. We didn't name him, but Wayne Dunn. But it's all there for people to read. But I did have a fair few private messages with him afterwards. And he's somebody who's very passionate about the fishing scene. Seems to have lived and breathed it for 30, 40 years, and was telling me lots of stories about, you know, how there was nobody on the banks in Yateley in, you know, the mid-70s and stuff. And he watched the paths, the grass turn to mud as you know, the anglers came. And I don't know, I think maybe he sees a couple of things from you know, a broader point of view. Fishing's a lot of thing to a lot of different people. That's something that I said to him in one of the messages, and he's made his own post today, you know, a bit of a philosophical post saying you know, a few of the words that we exchanged. So good luck to Wayne, and it was all a bit of fishy banter. It seemed to have stirred the net up a bit anyway, and it's all good, and certainly no hard feelings either way, I hope. DNA Baits are a fantastic sponsor of the Carp Show, dnabaits.com. You can get loads of money off, well, 5% to be precise, off any of their already cheap post free deals that they do. All you got to do is to use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. They do loads of different boilies. The Switch is the one that everyone's talking about at the minute. They've just released that. I think they released it for all the shows, and I think you can now buy it online as well. I've been seeing the market and everywhere. They do boilie deals where you can buy 5 kilos. You get 3 kilo of matching pellets or stick mix. You get pop-ups or wafters, and you get 250ml of bait soak. It's post free, it's delivered to your door. The price is $59.99 for 5 kilos, $94.99 for 10, $149.99 for 20, and there's even a 50 kilo deal as well. You can choose from all the flavours: Secret 7, Nutter S, SLK, the Switch, Ocean X, and like I said, you can get an extra 5% off that by using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. A lot of our friends are using DNA. We would not be telling you about it if I wouldn't use it myself. They do Zig deals as well. 2.5 kilo of spod mix, bottle of sticky sweet liquid, and a pack of Fox Zigger liners. That's £30 post free to your door, and you can get the 5% off. They do the Fluoro pop-up deals, 5 tubs of pop-ups, £25. Post free again, dnabaits.com, and don't forget to use the code CARPCAST5. One of our other sponsors, St. Amand Leisure, which is a fantastic lake in the south of France. It's a wonderful farmhouse. They are finishing their advertising with us this week because they are fully booked for this year. As Christoph and Lee will tell you, because I spoke to them this week. So we'll get them up in just a second. Thought it'd be a nice way to finish their 3 months of advertising. They're going to come back October, November time to start advertising for next year. But there is, I think there's 3 or 4 weeks they've got left this year, and they're going to tell you about those. So I'd like to welcome the owners of St. Amand Leisure to the CARPCAST. How are you doing, Christoph and Lee? How are you doing, guys?
How you doing, all right? Yeah, I'm really good, thanks. Yeah, it's all good, mate.
Cool. I don't believe I've met you, Lee. Have I before, somewhere, anywhere?
No, I don't think so, mate. No, although Christoph's spoken of you a number of times over the years, like, but no, we've not come to meet yet, but I'm sure we will in the end, like.
How did you two meet? You both obviously keen fishermen.
Yeah, I think, it was many years ago now, probably well over 25 years, I think. I think we briefly met on a little pit little clay pit near in Bedfordshire, sort of just in passing. And then a few years after that, maybe a year or two after that, on a bigger lake with some bigger fishing. On the first day of the season, I think it was, I woke up to him fishing opposite me. and on receiving a run, I came out to my rod and slipped in the lake with a load of laughter, with Christoph opposite me laughing. He came round anyway, we got chatting, helped me with a fish, and that was it really. Ever since then, we've been good friends.
How did you go from being good friends to purchasing a house and a lake in France? I mean, was it something you always wanted to do? I mean, I know, Christoph, you're from France, aren't you, originally, although you don't sound...
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I was born in France, my mum's French, my dad's Nigerian. So basically, I moved over to the UK when I was six and started fishing really when I was about six in the UK. I did actually used to have a French accent, but it kind of disappeared over the years.
And I presume you can speak French still?
Yeah, I still speak French, luckily.
Which must have made it easier when buying a lake, obviously. You can get the local info, chat to people, sort out all the stuff. But is it something you always wanted to do, Lee? But did you always have an idea to get a French lake?
Yeah, I mean, as we become good friends, we had a few journeys over, actually, when we were much younger. It's probably in our early sort of late teens, early 20s, we went over to France together in small groups. Quite pioneering back then, really, I would think. I loved the country anyway, and obviously the fishing back then is still sort of unknown, so it's quite an enjoyable thing. We often spoke about one day maybe getting somewhere ourselves, you know, and knowing obviously that Christoph had the inside line on all of that kind of thing, it kept it fresh in our minds. We kept talking about it, kept looking at places. Obviously, it's sort of 10 years, almost 10 years ago now, it all came to fruition, like. Well, to be honest, it all came about by accident. What actually happened was that I've got another lake, Cazon Lac, which is 20 acres in Brittany, and I've had that lake along with a couple of partners for about 15 years, and I thought I'd really like to get another lake. And one day I got a phone call, and it was a guy that was looking to buy a small place in France, and he wanted some advice. So I didn't know the guy, but I thought, no problem, I'll meet up with the guy in a pub and just answer any questions he's got and try and help him out. So I met the guy, and he started telling me about this lake, showed me pictures, and it was actually Saint Amand. So what happened was that what happened was he basically told me about this place that he was buying, and I said to him, yeah, it looks like a good buy, you know, I would go for it. And he told me about the site that he'd found it on, so I looked up on the site looking for other places, and I could see that the sale hadn't gone through yet, so I kind of registered an interest in it. The people who were running the site got back to me and said there's someone actually in the process of buying it, which obviously I knew because I'd met the guy. And next thing I knew, it was about a month later, I got an email saying the guy's pulled out. Are you interested? From the people that had the site. So that's basically how I found the lake. I didn't actually find it myself, if you like.
Yeah, cool. And then what have you done to the lake? I mean, did you have to do a lot? Have you stocked it? Did it come with fish? I mean, how have you got it from, you know, was it 10 years ago to the state it's in now?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've done a lot of work on the lake, and we had to stock it. I mean, when we got the lake, acquired it 10 years ago, there was one side that was really shallow. From the bank out, about 5 metres out, was probably only about a foot deep. And there was a load of snags, and, it was unfishable, basically. You couldn't actually even access the lake. when we viewed it and we first were shown the water from a path about 10 metres away from the water's edge, it was completely surrounded by hawthorns and nettles, and the gentleman just sort of waved his stick and said, you know, the water's over there kind of thing. And we were like, well, we need to see it. And he was like, well, it's just, it literally pointed and said it's through there. I think in the end, we cut a little hole through everything and it literally went and got into the water to get like a rudimentary idea of how big it was. And there's fallen trees all around it, mangrove growing out of it. I mean, we've got some wonderful photographs of it looking really gnarly. And I think it's been left up for over sort of a decade, I think, or something like this, we were told. It once had been a trout fishery, I believe. But it was perfect blank canvas to really get stuck into. You know, it's ideal for what we wanted.
So you've done quite a bit of work then, obviously snag removal, putting the pegs in, cutting everything back.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, we drained it. I think we moved 900 cubic metres of earth over a period of 10 days. We'd get it rained every day, all day. I think we had a fire burning for about a week of all this. Because they obviously just dam like a stream, and beneath that water surface, there was loads of like full trees and bushes that had just been left. So all of that had to be removed and got rid of. I think we inherited 48 carp that came with the place. They obviously had to be removed and put somewhere else while this work went on, and then we got those back, and they're in there to this day now, but a lot bigger actually. We then also handpicked some more fish to go in, nothing massive. We elected to get some nice looking fish and generally play the waiting game. It was a lot happier and found it more ethical, I think, rather than just throwing pigs in, big old scaly pigs in there. We bought just you know, before we play the long game, get some nice young fish that we know the provenance of, and now here we are. I mean, you know, they're coming on really well now. That's exactly what we wanted.
So what's the stock now, would you say, that you know of?
It's hard to say, really, because we basically drained it, you know, 8-9 years ago when we first got it that first year. Like Lee said, we had 48 originals, and then, I mean, over the last few years, the fish have really grown. You know, we originally stocked about 500 fish, maybe even 600. A lot of them went in at sort of 4 to 8 ounces. I mean, today we've got something in the region of 15 to 20 40s. We're expecting our first 50 this year, and probably anywhere between 40 and 60 30 pluses. And on top of that, just to back it up, I should think there's over 150 20s in there now. So really impressive stock.
Yeah, you can see why you're going to catch a hell of a lot of fish, and you know, one's going to break that 50-pound barrier, I'm pretty sure, this year, aren't they? Especially with the way the fish have grown all winter everywhere.
That's right. And, you know, to be honest, people are beating their PBs every week. I mean, it's just something that happens constantly. I mean, constantly. So it's great. It's great for people.
You've got some chaps on there now, haven't you, that have got off to a flyer in the first 24 hours?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they've literally only just started fishing yesterday, and the first fish they had was 28, the second fish was 29, the third fish was 30, and then they've had a 41. So, you know, they've had a really good start. There's only two guys on there, you know, not fishing nights, just doing days. And that's just when I spoke to our site manager, Christoph, this morning. So God knows what they've had since.
How many anglers can the lake take?
Well, we've had as many as six, on the understanding that is full. I would say four is a perfect number. You know, the lake's intimate enough. You can have you know, you can talk across the water. You're not miles away from each other. It's only 4.5 acres, although it is quite deep. You know, sort of 15 foot in the middle. It's an intimate water, so four's about right. Even a lot of our bookings are sort of 2 to 4 anglers, obviously with their partners or their children. As well, but four, 2 to 4 anglers is probably about right, I think.
Yeah, and they're all going to catch fish. There's plenty of carp in there, and you can send the missus and kids up to the farmhouse. Tell us about the house.
Well, my daughter, she had fish to just over 23 pounds last July. I mean, she was only I think she was 12 at the time. She's been going there since she's 4, so she knows the spots. And she broke her PB one fish after another after another. I think my girlfriend had fish just under 20 pounds. You know, she enjoys her fishing, but she doesn't do it regular. But, you know, they're friendly fish, and it's accessible to everyone. I think that was always what we wanted to do. I think there's plenty of waters that are not quite so prolific, you know, where you can go and hunt out huge fish and maybe only catch a handful in a week. But we wanted somewhere where you could go with your friends, all your family, all your children, and definitely get a few chances per day. And that's roughly what was created, I think.
That's what grabs my attention about the lake is the family holiday aspect of it as well. Like, say, you've got the house, you can get, what, two families in there?
Easily. I mean, look, the house is a big house. It's three floors. You've got four double bedrooms. You know, three double beds. When I say double beds, a couple of them are king-size beds. And then you've got two single beds in one of the double bedrooms with some bunk beds. So you can easily host 2 to 3 families. There's ample room, so it's perfect.
Yeah, table tennis and dart, English tea, Sky TV. You know, a lot of people are often amazed, actually, but we've tried to create like a home from home, so you really are. You're not roughing it in any respect at all. You know, you can arrive, hit the ground running, feel totally comfortable. A lot of our clients don't even bother fishing the nights. It's so homely. It's a holiday venue. So you fish through the dawns or through the days, but then get in the house of your family, have a nice meal, got a fitted kitchen. So, you know, it's all high specs, very comfortable. And so you can still have proper quality time with your family, plus quality fishing as well.
And what about the general area? You know, tell us about France. Are you going to taste a bit of real France while you're staying there?
Yeah, I mean, the area is stunning. It's my preferred area in France. I've travelled around France quite a bit, and it's really quite special. You'll struggle to find anywhere that's as green and as, you know, as welcoming, and it really feels as though you're on holiday. Really does. As soon as you arrive in that area, which is the Creuse area of France, you start going through a lot of valleys. You know, it's really picturesque. There's a lot of wildlife in the area, and the towns and villages are renowned throughout France as being really historic. A lot of French go to the area for their holidays, which says a lot.
It is a holiday destination for the French as well, or the area.
It is, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not too far from Limoges, is it, the biggest city?
No, it's we're about 30 to 40 minutes away. Actually, it's about 30 minutes from Limoges, and we're about 40 minutes from the airport. As you know, we do offer people a chance to fly and rent, so they don't have to drive.
Ah, so you have equipment and stuff out there if people don't want to do that long journey in the car with the screaming kids.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah,
cool. we just find as well that I think it can be quite a downer for the driver on the driver's side, having both done them together and with other groups of people. It's quite tedious sometimes to just having to do that journey, and particularly if you really do have a good you know, prolific holiday, you catch a lot of fish, you're shattered, and the idea that, you know, and obviously now with the price of petrol and all of this, the idea that, and the cheap flights, the idea that you can literally just book a flight, I think that it's, you know, generally speaking, they can be as cheap as £40 return, and maybe in high season, £100 return, and you can be in Saint-Amand in an hour and a half, or certainly in Limoges in an hour and a half, and then in Saint-Amand within 2 hours from taking off. Which really, and we have noticed that a number of our groups that did drive when they come again, they usually fly, because they realise that when they arrive, that all the tackle that we rent is of a certain standard. You know, we're anglers, we know what's fit for purpose, and the tackle we rent is of a good standard. And to be quite honest with you, you'd rather fish right up until your flight than have to leave at 6 a.m. to catch a boat that's like 4, 5, 6 hours away. You know, it means they can enjoy themselves, you know, they get an extra day of their holiday, in fact, from that, you know. No, that's it. No. You soon forget once you get a few on your own, once you catch a few, you're misgiving about that kind of situation. You forget all about that. And it's just, you know, as you know, it's what's on the end anyway. As long as it's fit for purpose, whatever brand it's made of, it's immaterial, as long as it works.
It sounds perfect, and I hope I get out there this year. Maybe when the weather's a little bit warmer. I know it's warming up in France nicely now, isn't it? It's just starting to warm up. I mean, I know you're pretty booked up for this year now. I mean, is there some specific weeks that we're trying to fill here? I've got a couple of dates in front of me that Christophe had sent me in May.
There's those May weeks which are available still. I mean, I think we've got two of those weeks available still. Well, actually, to be honest, there's three available, but we've got quite a lot of inquiries that we're waiting for some responses. So if anyone's interested, I suggest they get a move on, really.
Yeah, it's looking like the second week in May the 14th and the third week the 21st. And they will be going quick, right. So you're going to be hearing this on Saturday. So, you know, how's anybody interested get in touch with you?
Well, they can just basically email us or they can give us a call. Whichever they prefer, they can text us.
And the October, actually, Jamie, as well, we've got 3 weeks available still. In fact, we actually extended the year because we had so many inquiries and people were being forced to move their weeks that they wanted themselves to other weeks. And rather than let people down, we actually lengthened what we're offering. So we're actually offering October now as well. One of those weeks is provisionally booked now, but there are still 3 weeks of that month left as well. So I mean, we're open right until the end of October. So from memory, I don't know what those dates would be, but certainly if anyone shows the interest, give us a ring and we can negotiate about that.
Yeah, so October's still nice in France, isn't it? I mean, you are deep into France.
Yeah, it's 14 degrees last year, 14 degrees.
October's usually good. Yeah. I mean, I've been over there in November and it's been 18 degrees. So, you know, in October, it could easily be at upper double figures in terms of the temperature. So certainly a good time. The fish are at their, you know, their sort of autumn weights. And usually... That's right. That's right. No, not at all.
You mentioned there about going out for meals and what have you as well. We've got bailiffs on site who knows the area really well, and something that we're proud to offer is basically his knowledge. He's very knowledgeable in a local area. So not only obviously is he there to help you and put you on the fish in regards to the fishing aspect of it, but certainly, you know, if you want to go to the zoo or you want to go shopping or have a nice meal in a restaurant that's tried and trusted, he's able to give you that information, book it up for you. If there's anything you require or you want some directions, he's on site a lot to help you in that. And I think that's another thing that sort of comforts the family bookings that we get, because you're not just plunged into the middle of France with a phone number to call. You literally have got someone that will say, you know, eat in there, that's great. Go shopping there, that's good fun. That's a good water park. You can horse ride here, you know, it's good. And that's certainly something that that we're pleased we can offer, because I'm sure a lot of waters, it's not quite like that. So that's what, certainly one thing I like to think that we do well.
That's really great. I mean, having your own personal tour guide, I mean, it can be quite daunting, like you say, booking restaurants in a foreign language and stuff. I know us English are not very good at learning other people's languages, so...
No.
It's a help to have somebody there on site. Yeah, I didn't even know that, so that's great.
Yeah.
And I severely doubt, with the interest that you've had this year, I severely doubt it's going to be £850 again after this year. But at the minute, for two, maybe three families, four anglers on the lake, I mean, that is an absolute bargain. As I said, there's a few weeks left, a couple of weeks in May. Get on the phone to Lee or Christophe. You can call Lee on 07854 857 374 or give Christophe a call 07428 183018. The website is www.saintamandleisure.com, and email is saintamandleisure@yahoo.co.uk. Anything I missed? Anything you want to add?
No, I think that's pretty much all the details that people need. I mean, people need to obviously be prepared for some really hard fighting fish as well, because the fish at Saint Amand fight very hard, and that's something that will surprise people, because for the size of the fish, I mean, you absolutely are certain that you've got a kipper on the end, and after about half an hour of playing a fish, then you see a low 20 appear.
We always warn people, and I dare say it's no doubt something that everyone always says about their fish. It's such a cliche, but I can honestly, having caught many fish, they never let us down, Jamie. They fight so hard, and yeah, often they'll be standing there with their rod bent doubles. I know, it's definitely one of the big ones. And then an upper double after 15 minutes rolls over the net, and in the end, it's a constant joke that no one asks how big it is anymore, because you really can't tell. I think it might be because it's spring fed, or the margins are quite deep. We don't, you know, or they're good healthy strains. We don't really know, but they do fight very, very hard. So that's something I'm quite happy about as well, isn't that?
It's a perfect way to get a kid addicted to fishing. You know, to let them do.
Yeah,
well, and an adult, actually, a few adults. Yeah, definitely.
It's the perfect place to, you know, if you have got some families and there is the odd non-fisherman in there. I mean, they're going to catch some fish, aren't they? You know, and they're going to enjoy.
Yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
We have been considering doing maybe some kind of tuition. We're toying with the idea. We've literally only been speaking about it the last week or two, but we're thinking about possibly doing something along the lines of how would you put it, really just where father and sons or groups of younger lads would like to come and learn the basics of carp fishing, but take the knowledge that they are going to be able to exercise their knowledge in captures, because you're going to be able to catch fish there. And we've got enough experience between the both of us to help. So we don't quite know how we're going to offer it yet. But certainly, you know, keep in contact or make sure they keep an eye on our website. We'll be offering something over the next few months, but possibly even a week, those weeks in October or one in November.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that we've been talking about. And we want to allocate at least one week towards that. What we need to do is maybe see what type of interest there is. So if anyone out there is interested, then let us know, then we can try and accommodate them, and you know, try and create that and make it a possibility.
It's the perfect way to get a non-angler into fishing. I mean, the stereotype of fishing being boring, I mean, that's, you know, if you went on that trip, you know, you had a nice house, nice meals in local restaurants, you know, doing battle with your first ever fish, like, who's not, you know, you're not going to come away thinking, oh, that's boring fishing, you know?
No, that's right.
You know, it's the luxury, the nicest part of fishing, I think, that, you know, the kind of holiday fishing. And, you know, if somebody goes fishing for the first time and blanks for the first three sessions, they're fed up before they've started.
Well, that's basically what, I don't know if you call it a catchphrase, but bringing the fun back to fishing, Jamie, that was always like our mantra, really. And after a long chat, yeah, we thought that a lot of the time there's a lot of pressure put on anglers to just to catch, really, and to catch big and, you know, what have you. But really, it's meant to be fun, is it not? And that's what we really wanted to create. And our perfect client is someone who's possibly not caught a great deal, but knows the rudimentary sort of idea behind fishing, comes along and blows his mind with a good carp, you know. But also as well, the more elite that fish in England, that fancy a bit of a rest from the stress of that, and just get a few good scaly fish in there for a change, you know.
Well, when I say to my missus, look, come on, we're going to look at a lake. Like, it's pretty hard to get her excited. But, you know, when you say, right, well, we're going to France, it's 28 degrees, you know, we're going to catch some fish. I can spend the evenings with you. We can go out for a few nice meals. We can, like I say, visit the water parks, the zoo. It's not as hard to get them out,
no,
is
it?
Rather than down the local. So thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks for joining the Carpcast, and I hope to see you out there this year.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having us. Cheers, Jamie.
Big thank you to the guys. But that does leave a space for another advertiser. If you're interested in advertising on the Carpcast, the price is probably cheaper than you think. we can do a deal over a number of weeks, and it's, we won't advertise anything that we don't believe in. We have had lots of people messages. I'm sure you've had the same, Mark. I've had plenty of people messaging me, like, I've got a little bait company, or, you know, I make leads and I'm planning to do this. And it's great that, you know, lots of people are finding a, you know, a little niche, something that they're skilled at or something they can do. But because this show is quite personal, and I think people listen to the stuff that we say, I don't think I'd be comfortable advertising something unless either A, it's somebody that I know really well, that I know is going to make something, you know, a real quality product, and I would have to know them personally if it's, you know, a small company, you know, or certainly their reputation, you know, to stand before them. Or it'd have to be, you know, it's got to be something we can endorse happily, because we wouldn't want to, you know, advertise something we don't really know about or wouldn't use ourselves, which I think is pretty fair. Do you agree, Matt?
Oh, totally. We've got to maintain our integrity. And I used, for example, a few weeks back when we had Bespoke Baits on.
Yeah.
You know, that was, again, I know you got a few of the pots from the Northern Show, and I had a good, I think it was, well over half an hour chat with Martin on the phone, and you know, you can tell his passion, he's into his diving, he's been in fishing for a long time, and I'm looking forward, I can see the edges that some of his stuff might give me, so
yeah,
happy to put it
so
on.
So we were happy to promote it, and you know, we're looking for that kind of personal relationship. You know, the door is open to everybody, but you know, if it's somebody we're not aware of, or you know, you're just knocking up bait in your shed or something, you would have to come highly recommended, or you know, we'd have come across you somewhere along the way, because we don't want to advertise, like say, stuff we wouldn't use ourselves. You know, we're not about that. We're not about just advertising anything and taking the money off it. You know, we don't need the money to do that. The Carpcast is very successful now, 6,000 listeners a week. You know, like 25,000-30,000 a month. The Carpcast is flying. It does work, the advertising. I mean, as Christoph will tell you in a minute, they've had that lake 10 years, and this is the first time they've ever been full. I mean, they've never particularly advertised before, but it's such a great offer that they're doing, that you know, they've used us to put it out there, and bang, they're full for this year. And the advertising does work, I know, because I sold a shed load of DVDs that I hadn't sold for the last 2 years, and we don't even push them anymore. But if you do want any of the knowledge DVDs, you can go to our website, www.thecarpcast.com, and there's loads of stuff on there you can buy. We've got all the Carpcast t-shirts, hoodies, hats, they're all real high quality stuff. There's different sizes on there. We're doing a competition as well, aren't we, Mark?
We are. If you can get a picture of yourself with a capture, or just wearing some of our merchandise in any interesting situation, it's a pretty open competition, but just send us the picture, an interesting story accompanying will go a long way, and whatever entertains us, catches our eye, will win a place on our Royston social.
Yeah, that's a place worth £250.
Yeah. And that is going to be an epic weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. It's the Nash Lake Royston, which is in Cambridgeshire. There's two lakes there. We're taking 25 people with us, plus the extra guests. You'll get fed all weekend. Takeaway on the Friday. Breakfast baps in the morning, or breakfast rolls, or breakfast barm cakes, or depending on where you're from. Tea cakes, is it, in there? Who has tea cakes?
I think tea cakes are a different thing. They have, like, yeah.
No, there's some
sultanas and fruity.
Yeah, somebody, there's some part of the country that calls bread rolls tea cakes, which, oh.
Then they're wrong.
Yeah, I know they're wrong. But they think we're wrong. I mean, we call them barm cakes in Blackpool. Chip barm, if you're in the, if you ask for a chip roll in the chippy, they'll look at you a bit funny. But, you can purchase places on any of our socials. We've got the Cromwell coming up in first week in April, 8th to the 10th of April. There's just two places left on that. If you want to be one of those two people, or you and a mate, then get in touch with Mark, or go to our Facebook page. You'll be able to see the post where you can get involved. Obviously, the website, you can just buy it outright. There's a button on there. as you can buy everything that we do. The Nash Royston social's filling up extremely quick. It's not till August, but I think there's what 15, 16 places gone for that already.
15 gone already.
Yeah, and there's only 25, so I wouldn't hang about too long for that one. And we've got Christchurch booked in October with Frank Warwick. The Royston ones with Alan Blair and Julian Cundiff is joining us for the Cromwell one, of which there's only two places left. So you can do that on our website, or just get yourself a hat or whatever and take a picture of yourself in an interesting place or something that catches our eye, and you might just win a place for free. Somebody's going to. It could be you.
If there's Jaffa Cakes in the shops, that might go a long way.
You do get free Jaffa Cakes. It's in writing on our page. If you want to get the full details, like I say, go to the Carpcast website, www.thecarpcast.com. You can also listen to all the old podcasts on there, or you can subscribe to the Carpcast Extra, which is just a way of supporting us. When we first started doing this podcast, people wanted to support the podcast just to keep it going. I had people messaging me saying, I'll send you a tenner a month, I love it that much. And I'm like, we don't want to take money off anybody for nothing. Let's do something. So instead of just donating, you can get something for it. And the thing we came up with, obviously, is all the merchandise is any of the Carpcast socials, or just pay for the Carpcast Extra, which is £35 a year. Which works out, what, £2-3 a week, something like that. There's no adverts in it, there's no gossip. The Carpcast Extra is just all stories from people like Kevin Nash and Alan Blair, Daryl Peck, who else is on there, Ronnie DeGroot, Frank Warwick,
John Mack.
Yeah, just stories. We had John Mack's spooky UFO stories on the last one. We do some in-session stuff on there. It's just 3 hours of hopefully entertaining stuff, and you can do that on our website. What have you seen on the net this week, Mark? Anything?
It's on the net. It must be true.
On the net, on the App Store, Fox launched their Swim Mapper app. Have you got it yet?
I certainly have, yes. I'm very interested in this. I really like the look of it. They seem to have done it right. As usual, it stirred up a bit of a debate on the net. People saying things like, what's wrong with a pen and paper? Well, what's wrong with a free app? You know, a free app that's digital, it stores the info to the cloud. I mean, can you find any of your notebooks from 15 years ago? I know I've lost mine. I had ones from Elstow. I had a lot of, books I used to document every session when I was really keen. And it's all gone. This does it for you. It's a notebook on your phone. I know there's a couple of phones that are struggling. It works perfect on the iPhone because the App Store has to check all apps before it goes out. The problem with Android, it's a bit like PCs, is that anybody can make stuff for Androids. So to make an Android bit of software that works on every single type of phone, if you think of how many different phones there are, I mean, there's one iPhone and iPad, that's it. You know, it's the same operating system. When you go to Android, there's millions of them. So I think there's a few teething problems with making sure it works on every phone, but within a week or two, they'll have sorted it all. Obviously, as people go in and say, it doesn't work on my, some HTC 5 or whatever it is, they're getting straight onto it to sort any bugs out. But it works perfectly on my iPhone. It's basically how it works is you choose your lake. It will zone in on wherever you are. It uses Google Maps. So if you're on your lake, you just press the button and it'll give you an aerial view of wherever you are. You can scroll in and obviously just shape the lake on your screen, take a picture. So that's the lake done, and then you actually take a picture of your swim. So you look out, get the horizon level, take a picture, and then you can draw in markers. You can grab this like little marker symbol, looks like a tall marker stick. You can put it on like whatever your thing on the horizon is that you're casting out, a tree or a feature, a pylon, whatever it is. You can put the marker on that or whatever your reference point is. It then gives you the option to put how many wraps it is or how many yards or however you want to measure it. You then get the option to put the substrate in, which is the clay, silt, gravel, whatever it is. And then you can put notes in there. There's also some fish, little fish symbols where you can mark in wherever you've seen fish, big fish, small fish. And then there's a bit to put notes, obviously, if you catch or don't catch or whatever. I think it's a great app. It's completely free. You get a number of swims with it. You get more swims if you share. I think you get 3 swims for sharing the app with somebody else. And you can obviously share swims with each other. So if I go fish a lake, if we're both fishing on St. Ives and you map half the lake and I map the other half, we can share the swims with them. But what I would do if we were fishing St. Ives, I'd be telling you about little dustbin lid sized silt patches at 132 yards that aren't actually there. That's what I'd probably do.
Watching you thrash the water to a foam and get absolutely nowhere but frustrated.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
I like your thinking.
But
yes, you would. I
think it's a great app. I shared the app with 2 friends. They both accepted. I've now got 11 free swims. I can't see me fishing 11 different swims this year, so it's basically free. I would guess in the planning, I've been speaking to Lewis Porter and he did say that this is going to be the case. There's going to be add-ons later on, so I would guess it's going to be for the most popular day ticket lakes, so your likes, you know, your linear fisheries and anywhere. I'm guessing people are going to map the swims, you know, like well-known anglers or whatever. I know Fox have got a competition actually at the minute to win one of Tom Maker's swims that he's mapped. Obviously, you know, very good angler, somebody that knows I think it's at one of the linear waters, St. John's or somewhere, or Manor, and you'll be able to get his swim. They're doing a competition for that, I believe. But can you imagine if you were going to go and spend, I know you've planned to fish bluebell a bit this year, Mark, or especially like, you know, a gravel pit somewhere like St. John's or whatever, and there was a really accurate detailed map of a particular swim, and you're going to go and spend what, 90 quid on 3 days fishing on a day ticket? I'd spend a fiver on a map of the lake. You know, you're spending 90 quid anyway, it's a day ticket late, you want to maximise all your chances. I'd be quite happy spending a few quid on that extra bit of information. I know some lakes do, some day ticket lakes do have like topography and stuff, you know. Nathan at Cromwell, he had the lake contour mapped. I know Orchids gives you a map of all the swims and the features when you arrive there. There's a number of lakes that do that. But I would certainly pay a few quid if you're going to go anyway. What's your thoughts?
I'd certainly consider it, but I'm a suspicious person. I'd still check the spots out for myself before doing anything with them.
Without doubt, yeah. I mean, it's a starting point, isn't it? I'm not saying like I would fish those points. I mean, quite often the really well fished points and spots are not the spots you want to be on anyway. But you know, if you know there's a feature there, if you know there's a bar that runs all the way across, then at least you can make your own mind up to fish the gully, fish the silt at the back, fish the near side of the bar, fish right on top of it. You know, it's going to say, like, you're on limited time on a day ticket lake, aren't you? And you're paying, I mean, most day ticket lakes are £1 an hour. So if you spend 3 hours, like, just going around that swim looking for where the obvious features are at the bars, like, that's £3. It's the same price as what it's probably going to cost you to just look at it. And it saves 3 hours fishing, saves 3 hours of your time. So I can see the benefits of it. You know, if you're fishing a syndicate, you want to work it out for itself. Part of the achievement is actually, is actually doing the working out, isn't it? Solving the puzzle of the lake. But I think when you fish a day ticket, you're on a borrowed window of time, and you know, you're trying to maximise your chances within that time, aren't you? So I would take any tool available to me. I treat day ticket fishing different to kind of syndicate fishing, and which is more like hunting, I think, and working a puzzle out, solving a puzzle of the lake.
I suppose for unless you've got a literally photographic memory, this is going to be perfect. You know, if you're on a syndicate, you know, you're mapping each swim for when you get back. But if you're on a day ticket, if there's like, you know, a few of your mates, or you know, if you've got like, you know, a trusted friend, like, you know, I don't know, your mate Roger Bacon, you know, you'd certainly trust a swim he put you onto with that map, wouldn't you? And his spots.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see, honestly, good things with this.
Yeah, definitely, I like it, and they seem to have done it right. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody a year ago, you know, saying that it's the easiest way. I mean, I used to put my marker float out in the swim, pop it up, and then take a picture of it. I've also tried Snapchat, because you can draw on pictures on Snapchat, but it's very messy, you know, to get like a straight line to the spot and then try and write, you know, 68 yards or whatever the distance is. So it's done everything that I wanted, you know. I've saw a need for it. Fox have done it, and they seem to have done it well. I like the idea of the kind of sharing the swims with people. Like you say, I wouldn't always trust everybody I got to swim off, and I would still want to have a look myself, but it's certainly going to save you some time. And like you say, I mean, it's better than a notebook. You ain't going to lose it. It's stored in the cloud, all the info, and it's free, so I don't think there's anything not to like about it.
I'm pretty much with you on that now. Are you going to send me some swims?
Fox might get some money off me, because I'll probably have to buy twice the amount of swims that I need, so that I've got two of each swim. One for me and one to send to you. That's got slightly different info on it.
Oh, thanks. I'll just wait till you're asleep and steal your phone then.
It's cool. Is that about it for the net this week?
Yeah. I didn't see anything really that... caught my eye. I would say most of the net was this map, and that's pretty much what took my interest and what I looked at. I didn't look much further, if I'm being totally honest.
Cool. All right. Well,
we've got an interesting listener's question, if you want to dive into that one.
What I suggest is let's get our guest this week straight on, because he likes getting it on. Let's do him. We'll do all the other stuff afterwards. So I'd like to welcome the one and only Don. We've been meaning to get it on for quite a long time, but welcome Mr. Derek Ritchie to the Carpcast. How you doing, pal?
I'm fine, thank you very much for having me on the Carpcast. It's time to get it on with the Don.
You sound quite happy, considering your football team's just got beat in a London derby.
No, they drew. With 2 minutes left to go. It was 3-1 West Ham, and then Chelsea got lucky, and there was a foul outside the area, but they said it was a penalty, so... Anyway, that referee, we got to shoot him.
Yeah, he's not on your Christmas card list then.
No, definitely. they said he's the most, he's given away most penalties this year. He's the referee with the most, so he's not good.
No, okay.
Oh dear, never mind.
So I bet you've been following football as long as you've been fishing, haven't you?
Well, since I was a kid, I started fishing when I was 7, and I started going to West Ham when I was 7. Even though my uncle kept wanting to take me to Arsenal. I didn't want to go to Arsenal, I wanted to go to West Ham.
Sound like you're a proper Londoner. Where exactly do you live? Is it sort of more Essex way?
Well, I live in Suffolk now, but I was born in Poplar, so that makes me, and at Poplar Hospital.
Right.
And the sound of the bow bell, so I'm a thoroughbred Cockney.
Well, you're probably what I would say one of the biggest personalities in fishing. I picture you at every single carp show, with your boombox cranked up, and banging out some techno or some happy hardcore or something.
It's lovely.
And you jumping around, entertaining the masses with a headphone mic on normally. I mean, do you still do a bit of that?
Well, let's put it this way. I went to the Five Lake show last week.
Yeah.
And that Wolf's Clothing.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were there, and they had a proper DJ there, and he was banging out some tunes on there. And of course, I said to him, "It's not loud enough." And he turned around and he said, "All right, I'll crank it up a little bit." And I tell you what, within 5 minutes, He got a yellow card and they shut him down.
Yeah.
I said, can you get three of them at the shows? Because quite a few times at the shows, when I've been on different stands with the tunes pumping, they turn around and come up, especially if somebody talks a bit quiet on the stage, especially at Five Lakes, they've had me there and told me to turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, but we had the Wafty guys at the Northern Angling show a few weeks ago, and we loved it. I think it adds character to the show, but we got complaints from the other stands that were near them complaining.
To be fair,
I mean, on the Saturday when it was really, really busy and everyone came in, he was playing like a 2 a.m. peak time nightclub set, you know, rather than kind of, you know, something a bit more melodic, so... It wasn't as good song programming as it could have been if it had gone in with the nice stuff and eased it in, you know, all the reggae, and which he played later, you know, all the liquid drum and bass, it'd have been fine. But yeah, we got complaints from other stands, which we were happy with it, but yeah, it's
the thing is, when you look at years ago when I used to do it, because obviously I did a show at Wembley that was The Darker Side of the Manor. And that was all geared up in a separate hall. And from there, we went on to Dunstable and we'd done the Mad Carp Angler in 96. You know, I got a guy in who does raves, and he put the sound in and everything else, and I had fish flying off the ceiling and everything else. But they were those sort of shows. And the thing is, I did get a bit of bad press from the different magazines that are out there by saying, oh, he's so loud and everything else. And what makes me die now, you go to these shows and they've all got banging tunes over their fish videos on their stands. So, you know what I mean? It's... we've been there, done it, and got the T-shirt.
The frustrating one for me is our show, because we have a sound company that do you know, big functions, concerts and stuff like that, so we have a pretty impressive stage set up, big video screen at the back instead of a projector, and it looks the bollocks, but all the stands want to be by the stage because it's busy, and then they're all like, oh, can you turn it down?
No, we can't turn it down.
You want it to be by the stage. The stage is going to be noisy. People, you know, there's 500 people stood in front of it trying to listen to what's on the stage, you know, in a hall that's got 5,000 people in it. So it has to be loud, and you want it to be here, put up with it. And it is frustrating. I mean, you know, I've been a DJ and in a band before, DJ as a job for 25 years, and you know, I'm used to it. It's kind of, you know, it's my thing, and it's just frustrating when you get people, I can't hear people talking at the stand, and I understand it, you know, I'm on the other side of the coin now, I'm the guy that's having to tell people to turn it down because we're trying to keep everybody happy. But
but the thing is, many years ago, it was like on the bank. I remember being on Collingbrook and Paul Forward coming up to my swim and saying, Bell, and he likes a bit of housey roady stuff, and he said to me, can you turn it down a little bit? Oh, I've heard for the last 24 hours, all the way down the lake. But times have changed, you know what I mean? Your sound systems are a little bit more sophisticated, if you like. So you can listen to your music without offending anyone. That's what I try to do now. Sometimes I still have it on, you know, like people know when I turn up because they hear the car come in. But, you know, I try not to upset too many people now. being 65 this year, I still like having good fun. But I'll be like that until they put me in the box.
I feel exactly the same. You know, I'm 20 years behind you, but I can't see me hanging up my partying shoes for another 20 years.
Man, you've just got to keep doing it.
You've got to keep young as well. Yeah. I think keeping young in the brain really does keep you young generally, you know. I think you've still got a purpose.
I think
to
get told off by the wife, though. She does tell me off sometimes.
Is she not going out raving with you these days?
No, not me. Well, when I was 60, I went to Ibiza for my 60th birthday, and I went to see Tiesto with 12,000 people. It's privilege.
Yeah, that's where he's on money.
That was fantastic. And every night I used to sit in Cafe Mambo, and a lot of the DJs used to do a little hour and a half before they go on to the clubs, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I've spent many a night in Cafe Mambo before we've gone out, you know, elsewhere. Can't get get some dinner in there, watch the sunset, and
it's fantastic. Yeah. See all the girls go by.
Yeah,
I tell you what I did see when we was there. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. It was the Green Man. He had green hair with lights in it, green lights. He had, well, his face was green. Everything was green.
Yeah.
His shirt, his trousers, his shoes, his socks. He didn't have socks. Just everything was green.
I've seen him.
Yeah, fantastic.
Have you seen them?
I like people who are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen Spider-Man? The geezer that's always dressed as Spider-Man.
One day he was there when we was there. He turned up when the lady on the beach was doing her fire act and everything, spinning fireballs all over the place.
He's about 60 years old as well, isn't he? He's been there years.
Yeah.
He looks like he lost the plot in the 60s and never recovered. He just wanders around all day in a Spider-Man outfit up and down the beaches. 60-year-old. Yeah, it's an amazing place. But I found last time I was over there, actually, there's a big decathlon opened over there, and they've got a load of carp gear in the decathlon, and I was like, is there a lake on the island, because this will be the most perfect island now if I can find a few carp there. But I've searched the maps anyway, I can't find any lakes apart from the salt flats near the airport. But I don't know why they're selling this. They were selling boilies, you know, carp reels, rods, rigs, ready-made rigs, all sorts.
I bet they ain't done very well then.
I bet they ain't selling too many, are they? I saw it as a good thing. I thought there must be some fish in here. Oh, some carp fishing. I always take a little telescopic and stuff and fish off some of the rocks in different areas. We always do a bit of fishing over there.
Yeah.
But
I used to do that in Mallorca with my wife.
Oh,
The hotel that we're at is right in a bay, and you sit on the rocks right outside the hotel so you can have a beer and whatever. And I sit there with my wife, and we both got little whips, and we no chains, but just whips. And we just sit there with two floats out and get some bread, get some sardines, smash it all up, and all the oil off of it, and catch a. They're like little black bream.
Yeah.
And my wife, Beverly, she just does her nuts. She says, how can our two floats be next door to each other? Yours keeps going under and mine don't.
I have that with everybody I float fish with. I don't know what it is, but just got the knack. But yeah, dude, I always get, so that's the bait we use most of the time. You normally catch them like silver mullet looking things.
They're like a black bream, aren't they?
Is that what they are?
They've got a little black spot.
Really hard mouths, haven't they? Yeah.
And when you hook them on a whip, you have to watch out they don't go bing and cut it off.
Yeah, they've got pretty tough mouths. It's quite hard to hook them at first. You have to really you have to time it right when the float goes under. But yeah, we've had some great fishing. I always take a little rod when we go on Aldi. There's always somewhere, but that sounds perfect, right by the hotel, so you can have a drink and stuff as well.
Well, that's it. And my wife, she gets the arm, she storms off, gets back on the sunbed, and then half hour later, she's calmed down and she's come back and we're fishing again.
does she carp?
And the other thing.
Go on.
No, she does carp fish. This year she had a 41 while I was out in Ipswich, down in the south of France.
Yeah.
And I couldn't keep her off the rods then.
Really?
What happened? I left the rods in, and I said, look, I've got to go up the shop and I've got to get a couple of batteries. And she's quite capable. She can look after them.
Yeah.
All three rods are left here. Anyway, she said, when you drove away, it went off straight away. When I got back, about 35 minutes later, she's sitting on one of her cart chairs with a rod bent over and a fish going backwards and forwards. And she said to me, I thought it was going to die. It's been on there that long. And I said, don't you shoot me. Anyway, we netted it, and it was £41.
Wow.
And about 2 hours later, we were sitting there, and I got a take on one rod, and I went and picked it up and started playing them, the fish, and one of the other rods went off. Well, I found a little spot out, probably about 135, 140 yards out, proper little spot. I saw a few big fish turning over on it, and I'd had a couple of 50s and a 60 off of it. I had a 64 off of it, and anyway, I picked this other rod up, started playing it, and got it in, and it was a 44, and the other rod rattled off, and she picked it up. Well, when you pick the rod up, I normally go out in the boat, because out in front of me, just off to the right, there was a snag, and I had to make sure they didn't go in there, and this fish that she hooked went left. So she was playing it, and she's going, she said to me, take the rod. I said, no, go on, you carry on playing it. And anyway, you know, she was flat rodding it, she was putting it in the trees, I'm trying to make sure she keeps the bend in the rod. And I got in the boat, which was tied up in front of us, so I could get a bit further out to net it. Anyway, when it come up, it was a 60 plus fish. It was huge.
Wow.
All right. It was just so wide. Anyway, I said to her, look, start walking backwards. And I went, come on, come on, come on, come on, yes. And when I said yes, she put the rod down, it went straight out of the net, because I hadn't lifted it up, and the hook fell out. So that was that. She was, I couldn't keep her off the rods after that.
That's a place you go quite a lot, isn't it? Is that Ithaca, is it called?
Such Ictus.
Yeah,
it's Ictus. Such a beautiful place. I went there last year, caught 65, 66 fish.
Wow.
And 160, 550s, I don't know how many 40s, and the smallest fish I had was 26 pounds, I think.
So what's the stock?
It's 91 acres, and I haven't got a clue. There's just hundreds of fish in there.
And it's, plenty of big ones.
You can blank there.
Yeah.
You can blank there. I've seen people blank, but I just fish it my way. I've watched, like this, I was back there this year with Beverly, and the fishing, unbelievable. I had 720s, 39-30s, 26-40s, 750s, and 260s.
Oh my goodness, that is a severe session. How long were you there for?
Yeah, we were there for a month.
I sit
there for a month. But what you have to understand is they're not on all the time, because it gets so hot down there.
Yeah.
And you could be sitting there. But we got there this year. We arrived on a Thursday, and Jeremy, that owns the place, and he said to me, your swim's not ready because someone's in there. What you can do is we'll put you in a bungalow, because they've got bungalows and everything there. It's such a beautiful place. And we stayed in there, and then we went, and then we got to the swim, and we started fishing. Well, for 4 days, it is, and I've been everywhere. I've been to the Maldives fishing the sailfish. I've been over to Vegas. I've been all over the world, and it was so hot. The humidity was unbelievable. Well, you could drink a bottle of water and it comes straight out where you were sweating so much. And we had 5 days of that.
Wow.
And then on the fifth day, there was nothing caught on the lake. The lake had totally switched off because of the heat. A thunderstorm came from the west, and a thunderstorm come from the east. The two met over the lake. The winds went up to 120 kilometres an hour. The trees was falling down everywhere, and I reeled the rods in. It all come together about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the wind, well, I got soaked getting my rods in, and the thunderstorms that were going on. We pulled out just as a tree fell down across the bath. There was a Spanish guy in swim six. He had a full-blown tree smash his bibby down, and he was up having a shower. his mate, he was sorting one of the rods out, so he didn't get crushed. Tree fell down in the swim they called the VIP, fell into the lake, and there was probably 25 trees fell down all over the complex.
Wow. I'm looking I'm looking at the website now, actually. It looks like certainly one bank looks beautiful. There's a lot of trees around it. Is it French-owned?
Yeah, that's the one we picked.
Is it French-owned?
Yeah.
Right, so yeah, how did you discover it?
Well, the thing was, a few years ago, when I left for Sunnier Climbs and I bought a Frankia, caravanette, big one it was. I was looking for places to go and fish, and I went from place to place. First of all, I went to Fisherville, then I went to Farm Lakes, which is just north of Paris, and then I went down to Eden Lake, which is down in past Limoges and down Limousine, around that area.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was looking on the internet, and I saw this place. So Rob from Fishing in France, he said to me that you can't take the van there because, obviously, got no PowerPoints or anything to plug the van in.
Yeah.
And I found it, and I looked at it then, and I thought, oh, what a lovely place. Well, the following year, when I come back, Stevie Briggs went down there with Tim Bozo.
Yeah.
And, you know, Stevie Briggs had a few nice 50s out of there, and then, of course, I followed him down there a little while afterwards. But it's such a fantastic place. 15 twins on the big lake, and you've got the sturgeon lake. You get a lot of Spanish on the sturgeon lake.
Yeah.
They've just been putting sturgeon in, I think, up to £200, isn't it?
Right.
You, 5 minutes down the road, you've got the shops, and Beverly, she loves going to the shops, only 5 minutes in the car, and you've got everything there. There's McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, all the different restaurants and everything else there. So it makes it such a nice place to go on holiday.
There's a clubhouse on there as well, isn't there? Is there a bar in there and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They do meals in there as well. Rob Miley went down there. And we, he was having a word with me, and I said, go on, get down there. It's lovely. But Rob, if you look up on the internet, Ictus UK, Rob, who runs the trips out there, he puts you onto it.
Yeah, it's a guy from Norwich. I've just checked the website, actually. You've got me pretty interested in it. And every picture I see you in on there, there seems to be naked women on that place. How does that always happen?
Oh, that was an added bonus. That was. one of them was his wife. He told me a little story about his wife. I was having a barbecue with him. Because he loves going to Ibiza.
Yeah.
He loves house music, and he just is an absolute fiend for it, right? He's got, I don't know if you've seen the front cover, he's got a Ferrari, an Aston Martin, a Hummer, and an Audi, so he ain't short of a free bob. And what happened, we went down there, and they were trying to finish the calendar off, because they do a calendar every year for Ictus.
Yeah.
And the idea is you catch a few fish and the girls will have their photos done with them. Well, what happened, he was going off to IFBA for the closing ceremonies.
Yeah.
And this was the last day before they went. This was on a Saturday, and he was leaving on the Sunday to go to IBFA. And I was standing there looking after the fish for them. Every time they picked them up, I was worried they were going to drop them, just get out of shot as they're doing it. And we got it in the bag for him. And of course, he said to me, he said, "Derek, I'm going away. I want to see you before I go. Would you like an extra week for free of charge?" I said, "God, no, I'll have that." And Beverly and me stay for another week out there.
Wow. But how much is it generally for a week, if you take your own gear, Drive and Survive?
Drive and Survive, I think the fishing comes out about 260, 270, something like that.
Right. Is there a bar in the clubhouse as well? Is there food and drink?
Yeah. In the clubhouse. It was under new management this year. But yeah, there's a bar in the clubhouse, there's a restaurant, there's beautiful food in the restaurant. That's all French one.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, to be honest. And there's a friend of ours got a lake near Limoges as well, which is, you say that's not too far away.
No, that is Ixos. That's 10.5 hours from Calais.
Ah, right, so it's a bit further down.
On the motorways. I like it there because it's nice and warm.
Yeah, I bet it's very warm down there. Well, as you said. So tell us how you came about basically leaving England, buying a camper van and going on tour. I mean, what made you do it?
Well, what happened, I was working with Maver, and Maver decided to pull the plug on their carp gear.
Right.
And what happened, so that meant I was redundant. Beverly was still working, but she had a really good job, but she had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work.
Yeah.
And although she finished at 10, because it's all these stupid hours that people, like these companies, like you to work there. And of course, I said to Beverly, I said, "Look, why don't we just rent a house off and buy a van and go travelling?"
Yeah.
Well, she was like a fish out of water to begin with. She couldn't relax or anything, not after working those sort of hours.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cough at the moment.
Yeah, I can tell.
So what happened, we got rid of everything and rented the house off, bought this van and went off, and that was it. The day we left was probably the worst day ever, because we were booked to go on a ferry, and I looked at the weather forecast, and they were forecasting false 10, 11 gales, and I wasn't going to go across that little bit of water. So we changed it and we went in the tunnel, come out at the other end. On the way to where we were going, we were going straight over to Fisherville, and it was southwesterly wind. We're driving towards Fisherville. I had this wind blowing at me all the way. There was cars turned over, all sorts on the way there, and we got to Fisherville, and then I had about 2.5 months on Fisherville.
Wow.
And we sat there, slaughtering the fish. The trouble was, I was running out of bait faster than I could put it in on that place.
Yeah, it's full of a minute in there.
I fished off of the damn wall there, and in the first couple of weeks I used 40 kilos, and I've had over 100 fish each week.
Wow.
And I kept sticking the bait out and just casting, because they don't let you use bait, but you can use a boat to bait up, a rowing boat.
Yeah.
You can't use bait boats. So all I was doing, I was sticking bait out, 20, 30, 40 baits over the area, and of course in the mornings I was getting anything up to 7-8 takes a morning, and things were going really, really well on there. And then, because I started to run out of bait, I started using particle and it didn't work the same.
No.
Well, I was using cell boilers. Kev Knight done me some cell shelf lights, and I had 100 kilos on them, and I thought, I don't want to use them all up on there, because I was getting a lot of upper doubles, 20s. There's so many fish in there. Catfish and everything else. And yeah. That was that.
How long did you last on tour? How many lakes did you fish? What was the best lake?
Well, I went from there to Farm Lakes,
yep,
which is run by a French guy, Oliver, and that was the nuts when I was on there. I thoroughly enjoyed that lake. Also, I changed vehicles.
Yeah.
Beverly had seen this vehicle come up on the internet, and we came back to have a look at it, and when we got it all checked out, the guy who was trying to sell it had finance on it, and I wasn't, I didn't want to know. So in the end, I bought this 26-foot Francia, which was winterized and everything, to proper go on our travels, because we were going to try and go to Spain for the winter.
Yeah.
Anyway, on Farm Lakes, I drove off the lake and there was a fish in there, two-tone it was, and it was 52 pound, and I saw one of the guys holding it, and I said, Beverly, I'd love to catch that one. And anyway, we left, come back. 2 weeks later, I went back out with my new truck, got out there, and there was a guy holding the fish again. Somebody else had caught it, and then she went, that's the one you wanted to catch. I said, look, don't worry about it. 2 days later, I caught it.
No way.
Because I said to her, I said, the amount of time I got here, that will come to me. There was a common in there as well. Somebody had brought it to the lake, and it was £52, this common, big, long torpedo. Mm. And anyway, it took me a couple of weeks after it had gone in. I had that as well. I had it out of £48. It was 52 when it went in. That all dropped back a little bit, and that was a nice old catch. But some of the fish, they were black fish, black. Yeah. Mirrors and black common, and it was I was there, I suppose I must have had 150 fish out of that lake.
Yeah.
I don't know how many 40s I had and how many 30s, because you just lose count. I can only look at the photos, because I didn't take photos of all the fish. And then I said to Beverly, we've got to start getting ready to go south. Anyway, the dean from Eden's Lake, he said to me, come down, you can have a go on the North Lake. Well, when I went there, right beside the lake is a shower block, a toilet, everything is there right beside the North Lake. And we went in there and started fishing, and stayed there for quite a bit longer than what we really what we're going to, because the dean runs it was really ill, and he went to hospital, and I sort of looked after the lake for him,
right,
while he was gone, because there's three lakes at Eden's Lake.
Yeah.
That was that. But in the last in the last week, I kept watching all the birds going south, and I've just said, Beverly, we've got to go soon. We have to go. Everything's flying south. And in the last week, I was sitting there in 24 degrees in the morning, and in the evening at 8 o'clock, it was down to 4 degrees.
Yeah.
It hammered down with rain. And you couldn't see the lake.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. And I had a take at about half past 10 in the evening. I had it on for quite a while, and then all of a sudden it cut me off on the mussels in there.
Mm.
And I said to her, we've got to get out of here. As the animals say, we've got to get out of this place. We drove south, went down to a friend of mine who's got a place at Riva Rocca called Cat Burglars. Went down to his place for a week, and then we went off to Javier in Spain.
Yeah.
And then on to Benidorm. Beverly had a trauma to her eye, and she had laser surgery while we was out in Spain, and she wanted to come home.
Right.
So I had to take the truck. I dumped the truck at Riva Rocca at the Cat Burglars, and then we flew back just before Christmas, three days before Christmas. Some friends of ours put me up when I got back, because obviously we'd rented the house off. And I had to go back out a bit later and
to get
the truck up and drive it all the way back.
Wow. Is there any fishing near Benidorm?
There is. And when you go towards Javier, there's a stretch of river. All the big giant reservoir there, which was 48 or 50 foot deep, that's dried right out now.
Wow.
But there's a river, because I got to know some people in Javier when I was there, but the fish go up to sort of, if you're lucky, mid-20s.
Yeah. Yes. Nothing to get excited about. But.
No. But,
I'm just taking you back to, you've been fishing nearly 60 years. That's a long time. And I see that you had the Essex record common in like 1976, which was a mid to upper 30. I mean, that was a big fish in them days, wasn't it? In 76. Did you do a lot of fishing around there? I know you did. You run the Essex Manor for a little while.
What happened in 76, I'd just come back from Israel. I was out in Israel on a kibbutz, and while I was out there, I run the fish ponds out there. Then I came back, saw that big common, split up from the wife for that summer. That was 76, the year of
the drought, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, and South End Pier caught light and burnt down, and and then what happened over the next few years, I went back to my roots, because I was taught carpet fitting by a real old boy who taught me how to fit carpet, sewing them and doing everything that you do with them, and what happened, my knees give out in the end, my back.
Yeah.
And I gave up fitting carpet. Well, I was out of work for a little while, and what I used to do was drive over to Wallasey Island when we had tides going out in the summer and catch bass for money.
Right.
Go and catch four or five fish a night over there. Fishing with little tiny garfish for bait.
Yeah.
And what happened, I got asked to go and run Olympus Outdoor World.
Right.
At Lakeside. And the people who I was working for at Olympus, it was like a franchise in there. There's a guy called Mickey Tuna and Canty Angling, Steve O'Rourke.
Yeah.
And County and Basildon run the manor. Well, when they went to pull out of Olympus Outdoor World, because they were going to close it, they asked me to run County Angling.
Yeah.
And then when I started running County Angling, I run the manor at the same time.
I heard plenty of stories on there about you playing music to the fish, pumping the tunes
out.
I loved it.
The other day I was seeing looking on my phone, and what's his name come up, you know, where he lights a cigar and he throws the speaker, Russ Abbott,
oh yeah,
he throws the speakers in the lake. And that's one of my favourites, because I know people don't associate, you know, if you look at Richard Walker, he said they like listening to the radio, didn't they?
Yeah.
If you look in his interviews, he said that, well, I think they like listening to house music, especially when you put it on top of your rods, put the unit on top of your rods, it has to go down the line.
Sending the vibration. Well, yeah, it does. I mean, that's how the early telephones worked, isn't it? Just straight down, you know, the old two cups and a bit of string. So it definitely carries sound, you know, the line.
I know
into the
I've
water.
Got a film on earlier on. In the year, I was down at Linear for the motor neurone disease down there.
Yeah.
And in the bay up for me was Lee Mozza.
Oh, yeah.
And he did a film thing. And what happened, I had Chilly behind me, and I thought, oh, I can't put the tunes on while he's here. Well, he moved and went over onto the other lake, and in the afternoon I switched the tunes on, and I proper had them on in my car. There was Rob Marsh opposite me, and I know he likes a few bangers. anyway, I turned it on, and Lee Mozza took a film, and he went, I can't believe it. He just switched the music on, and his rods rattled off. And what can I say?
Did you have Fish Out the Manor when you had your music on top of your rods?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. I've got a picture. You'll see a picture in the book when I was on another lake. And I put the boot, because I pestered the whole of all the electric shops in Basildon to try and find the right sound to come out of... you know, like a boombox.
Yeah.
And all the ones that looked me up with all everything on them, they sounded crap. And in the end, I got a Philips one, which was fantastic, beautiful sound to it.
Yeah.
And I used to use one of them big 12-volt batteries to take round to play it, because it would wear down so far. Anyway, I put it on my rods, and I actually caught a £40 common with that on the rods. I had to take it off, pick the rod up to hit it.
I had in the early days of going down to Nash's Church Lake, when it wasn't fished quite as much as it got fished later on, so basically it was a shock to the fish when somebody was fishing, and like if you caught one, they shut up shop a little bit, you know, they got a bit scared because they weren't used to being fished for all the time. But there was three lads, Reedy and a couple of the other lads, used to live in the lodge on the side of the lake, and they were all DJs into drum and bass music, so they had the music pumping every night. And then as soon as an angler came, you know, like a guest of Kevin's or whatever, to fish the lake, they obviously turned the decks off. And and I thought, well, when the fish know they're getting fished for, when there's no music playing, because them lads were playing music every night, you know, if there was no anglers on, and then if there's an angler come, the music stops, you catch one, the fish shit himself, and all of a sudden, you know, they know something's not right. So I'm like, get that music on, you know. I used to tell them, crank it. I used to fish right in front of the lodge, and I caught every single time. They were like, we love it when you come down because we can still play the tunes. And I'm like, it helps the fishing, it definitely helps it on there. I'm convinced of it. You know?
Yeah.
So
well, I spoke to Lee Man, didn't I? The Tackle Box, Lee Jackson. And he reckons when they was in Canada, when England and Chile won, right, they were sitting there and they were getting, you know, like after sitting there in the competition, you know, right on the edge of your seat all the time, they put the music on in their truck.
Yeah.
And they put AC/DC on, and the rod started rattling off. And what happened, because when you're doing that sort of thing, you've got to leave the engine running. I couldn't run my stereo in my car when I had my other cars with a big box in the back, because otherwise, your battery goes flat. And of course, what they were doing, they were having it on for so long, and when they switched it off, they stopped catching fish. And he told me that, Lee Jackson.
we're going to start a crazy, aren't we? Every carper's going to be buying bean boxes again and taking them on the lakes. Yeah,
I've heard quite a few comments from different people along the way that have, if he was on my lake, I'd kill him and all sorts. But they don't understand that I will not play loud music if it offended people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
The problem is, I go to these dudes, and they want it on all the time. You know, we did a charity fishing down at Cleveland Lakes, and the guy that was running it all kept saying, oh, put it on, put it on. I had Rob Manning on the point next door to me, and he said, like, it was like a rave for the whole weekend. And then he turned around, and at the end of it, we won. And he said, well, it can't be that bad if you've won.
Hey, Rob likes his music. He goes to Ibiza and doesn't he?
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. Mm.
Yeah, we hope to get Rob on it at some point. He keeps promising, but he's evasive sometimes. But if he's listening. So, did you always play music? Like, even back then, the 70s, were you having music on the lake?
Well, no, not really. Not really. It all started for me when I reckon probably late 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
The thing was, I wanted to listen to that sort of music.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it at home because I've got neighbours around me. And if you've got banging all the time, banging away, the neighbours won't like it. And that was that. Well, the only time I could do it was when I went fishing.
Yeah.
And it makes me I sort of, it's weird because people come to the swim and they go, oh, you ain't got your jeans on. Got your jeans on, then I get a bite.
The lakes were a lot quieter in those days, I guess, as well, than what they are now. So,
some of the things that we did, like on the Manor, you find out when people read the book.
So you've got a book coming out. You're writing, what is it, just an autobiography about everything or just about fishing?
It's about what I've been up to throughout the whole of my life. I'm not going into the early days of the sex and drugs and rock and roll and everything. Not going down that path, because what you don't realise is when I was 16, I saw some of the biggest bands in the world, and they were getting paid like 100 quid for the night, not even that.
Yeah.
There was a place where I lived in Southend, called the Cricketers, and I saw the original Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green, Jeremy Spencer, John McVie and Mike Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Them in the setup, Peter Green's now very close.
Yeah.
Jeremy Spencer, I don't know if he's still alive, but the only one who's keeping it going is Mike Fleetwood. Obviously, in America, he took it to the next level. I saw John Mayall, I saw Crazy World of Arthur Brown, T-Rex. Didn't see them there, saw them up in London. Yeah. I saw Fleetwood Mac get banned at the Marquee in London.
That was a venue, wasn't it, the Marquee?
Oh, dear. Because they used to come in the pub next door at half-time.
Yeah.
And they were all whiskied up. That's where they were singing Whiskey in a Bottle and everything.
Yeah.
And two of them was left on the stage. So that night, they got banned. it was crazy.
Were you into the rock music back then? And
oh yeah, well, I what happened when I was 14, I was a mod. When I was 16, I was a hippie. And that was it. I stayed. I think once you're a hippie, you're always a hippie. But then you had to have the hair, and I used to backcomb the hair up and go out to these places. I tell you what, my mum, when I was 16, I used to go down to the lake round the corner from where I live, go into the shed, get all the raving gear on, or me party gear, flared trousers, velvet, Cuban heels, everything else. And then get on a train and go to London, get absolutely off your nut for the whole of the weekend, come back down, change all my gear. My mum used to go, was it good preaching this weekend? Yeah, mum. You know?
I'm pretty sure I've done that. I'm pretty sure I've used fishing as a cover for various things a few times. So, I mean, how much of the naughty stuff's going to go in the book then?
Well, the thing is, kids are going to read it, and there's things in there that kids shouldn't read. I know. I don't know. Somebody said to me, you should put it all in. Well, it's, you know what I mean? I've got to, but somewhere you have to draw a line. I don't think my wife wants to put in some of the things that happened.
I had a similar youth, you know, obviously a few years on from you, but you know, we had all sorts of little rackets going on that, you know, involved driving abroad, fishing the canals in Belgium while we were, you know, buying tobacco from the gaffs over there, bringing boxes back. We ended up in Andorra one time on a trip and ended up getting nicked on the way back and spending 3 days in jail in France. I've got a whole list of them that. Stories that I've never told, you know, more than anything, you know. I don't want my mum reading it, you know, which she will if I ever wrote a book.
My mum's gone now, but she was there when it all happened, you know what I mean? But obviously, I, as I say, when you've got kids, you know, I think that a book, me bringing out a book would appeal to a few of the youngsters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, obviously, you've got to keep it, you know, a little bit straight and narrow. There's other bits and pieces, you know, like when we was on the manor, we used to go and see the Black Snakes.
Yeah.
And there was a pub down the road called the Prince of Wales, and we used to go down there, and we used to say, if you don't go down the pub, you don't catch a fish. And of course, it was true, because all the people would be sitting there and wouldn't want to go down the pub. All right, with their lines in the water, and where did the fish go on a big round lake?
Yeah.
They will go to the swims when there's nobody in. And we used to feed it up 20 yards out, 25 yards out, go down the pub, come back, and recast out in the dark.
Yeah. They'll put them on the spot.
Yep.
And it used to work.
On the coast. Yeah, I caught the amphibian first time off a pub chuck. a double pub chuck, because I cast it and I didn't like the feel of it. I wasn't that far gone.
Yeah.
Didn't used to go there and get absolutely blasted every time we went in there, just have a few drinks, a little bit of social with the boys, take Milky Bar Kid down there and let him have a look at the old fat fags in there. And it was well happy.
I think years ago now, I mean, years ago, there was a bit of a culture of going to the boozer. I don't know if it was because it was, you know, we had to pass out for the night when we were fishing. We were allowed out, so part of it was going to the boozer. There was a culture of it in the sort of late 80s and 90s.
That's right.
You had the Horse and Barge, the Hef.
We all read Tiger Bay.
Yeah, that's right.
The thing was, which I enjoy and I still enjoy, it's not all about fishing.
No, of course not. It's going out, you know. It was magical to me years ago. Like you say, finding the local chippy, having a beer in the local pub, was all part of it, being out there, you know. The nights seemed to last longer in them days. I don't know if it's because, you know, the equipment weren't as good and you were awake for half of it, or I don't know, but it seems you don't hear of that as often these days, do you? There's a few lakes where people used to, your Raisebury's and stuff, people used to boat over to that pub over there. I'm sure the Horse and Barge is still frequented by anglers in it on, you know, down in the Colne Valley, near Savay and Harefield and all them. I mean, that used to be the place Hutchinson and everyone used to write about. I don't know. I'm sure certain lakes it still exists, but it's not not as common these
days.
That's the thing.
It's not all about this. It's not hard as talking to you about football earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's other things. There's other things that go on which make it, you know, whatever you take out of fishing, whatever you want to take. Don't expect, you know, nowadays, to me, it doesn't seem so fun for a lot of people, although I've been enjoying it.
It's got very serious for some people, hasn't it? There's, you know, it's an element of competition, it's a lot more doing it. But you've hit the nail on the head. Like, it fulfills a lot of goals that are different for different people. Some people do it to get out the house for the weekend, you know, to as a bit of an escape. Some people are completely addicted to it and it's the only thing they've got in their whole life. And then everything in between. You know, some people just like the holiday fishing. They like going abroad, getting a bit of sun, catching a few whackers. You know, it's horses for courses. There's no right or wrong. You know, it's whatever you want
out
of it.
What got me is when I used to see a few years back some of the things, well, you know, people would turn around. It was like when I turned around and put in one of my articles I wrote, Time Bandits, and all of a sudden, Time Bandits were everywhere, you know, like everyone was going, oh yeah, he's a Time Bandit, he's a Time Bandit, he's a Time Bandit. And the thing was, I always used to want to be a Time Bandit because I was working and I in the tackle shops and fitting carpets, but I had to go and do that so that I could go fishing.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, when I used to run Brentwood and County Angling, you know, I used to hate it. I used to go down to Dallas on the tip rate and be sitting there doing me two nights, been nothing cool, right, reeling the rods in, and the Time Bandit turns up and he's there till I come back next week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I always wanted to do that. Well, now I've got to 65, or the last 5 years, I can do what I want.
Yeah.
I still catch fish regularly. You know, before Christmas, I went to Ixus, I had a 64. That was my PB French.
Yeah.
And then come back home, spoke to Ben from the quarry, and he said to me, "Oh, go and catch that common." Walked on there 2 hours later, I caught the common, £44.
He's still got it.
English common PB, and then went down to the Rise, get on there on the lake 4 hours, do my PB in England, £48.
Wow,
you know, what
still
I mean?
still got it.
No, I never was without it. A lot of people think, because I disappeared and went to France, I think that I sort of get locked, give up. But I haven't. I've been on it the whole of my life. I'm back in total. I was in total the other week. Managed to get in there. They wanted me back to see what I was doing. I'm going to be doing a little bit with them in the coming year, so...
So you've been in the press probably from the late 70s through to the current day. I mean, you must have seen like the actual industry change quite a bit in that time.
It changed completely. You know, I was a bit down a few years ago when I left Mavor, sort of, if you like, that was when I finished, because I couldn't get another job. I'm not going to go and work in dirty Tesco's or anything.
Yeah.
Now, anyone who works in Tesco's, I'm not dissing them down, but it wasn't for me. And I sort of, let's put it this way, I thought I'd been left on the shelf, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because all these companies nowadays, I was talking to the headbangers, and they turned around and said, he turned around and said to me that it's changed. He says, whereas all those years ago they wanted older people, but now it's all the companies want youngsters, and they're pushing everything, all the young people, and it's just like the older people got pushed to one side, you know what I mean?
There is kind of a movement to make it, you know, more media friendly, like, you know, the Corder always, you know, people always kind of refer to the fact they had, you know, a group of young, good-looking guys, yeah. You know, and they yeah. featured them heavily. You know, they worked hard on marketing those people. It was a certain type of face, you know, that I don't know if it was by accident or design, but it certainly was noticed. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean that's the media in general. You know, that kind of is how media works in all industries. You know, you're trying to sex yeah. it up, make it attractive. But obviously, especially in angling, you know, there's people that have been around. You know, they're the ones with the experience. They're the ones that have sort of been there, done it. And fishing is an experience thing. You know, you've got to have come across dozens and dozens and dozens of different situations to, you know, kind of know how to deal with it. So it's interesting, but it's you know, it's good that you're still in the magazines. I mean, you're a character, you know, you'd be sorely missed in fishing, and I hope I'm still out there doing it, you know, in, you know, I'll be your age in 20 years time, and it gives yeah. me hope that I'm still out enjoying it just as much as I'm now, and I've been for the last 30 years myself, you know. It's I hope I'm out there doing it just the same.
Somebody said to me the other day when I was on the lake, can't believe you're still out here and you're still doing it. I was out 2 nights in the week. I go every week, 2 nights, and just keep going. I just love... I will never lose the bugs for fishing. Never.
Well, that's brilliant. Never. And that's a nice note to end it on. We've done an hour. And when's the book likely to be out? Are you writing it? Are you
Later on in the year. I've got a meeting this week to put some more forward and get it all ready. And
have you got a publisher yet, or are you doing it yourself, or what's happening?
No, I'm doing it with Rob Maiden, because he's going to do it how I want to do it. It's not, you know, I've had a little word round with different people, and Rob is going to do it how I want to do it. So hopefully we'll get it right.
Yeah, well, obviously Rob's been around a long time. He probably knows what you want more than anybody, I guess. You know, he was doing it 20, 30 years ago, and on the similar sort of lakes, the Yateleys and everything. So, but maybe
Tiger Bay and everything
exactly.
Else. But you know, like, he's done it with Dave. He's done it with Dave Vane, and he's done it
Terry
with
Hearn as
Stevie
well.
Stevie Briggs. So, but we, you know, I'm sure it'll be a good book. I hope so, anyway. There'll be some funny stories.
I'm looking forward to it. Or maybe we'll get you back on just when you release the book. We'll grab a copy, review it, and we'll get you on to talk about it.
Fantastic. Now, I've got to come up to the Northern Show. I'm getting a lot of people on my Facebook keep saying, oh, when you coming up?
Well, let's
have... I know last time...
It snowed, didn't it? You couldn't get up, didn't you, the first year? Yeah, no, we had your books. Well, take this as an offer. We'll have you next year. We'll get the Don in Manchester.
Fantastic.
We'll get it on with the Don.
Get it on.
Okay, pal. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for joining the Carpcast, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Derek. As I said to him, I really hope that I'm still at it at 65 years old, as keen, 3 or 4 nights a week. It's fantastic. And, you know, I'm doing it at 70, 80 years old. But, yeah, it's all good. Listeners' questions, Mark?
Yeah, just got one this week, which actually came to us from our website on the email.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll have got it as well on our little contact form.
Yep.
From Gary Barton. Says, my tackle tart sensors have recently been aroused by the new Shimano Ultegra 14,000 XDDs. I currently use Witchwood Exorcist Big Prick free spin reels on my three rods, which are Daiwa Black Widows. I currently do not have the budget to upgrade both rods and reels. So my question to you is, what would you suggest I upgrade first, my rods or reels? I currently fish a syndicate lake that requires a 120-yard chuck in some swims. I cannot cast anywhere near that through ability rather than equipment. But would better reels or better rods help me get a bit closer? I know that better technique would help, but I'm working on that. Thank you in advance.
I disagree with him slightly. I think it's all down to the equipment. I mean, obviously, you've got to be able to cast. You've got to be competent. But if you can cast 90 yards with your current setup, with the right line, and line is the biggest inhibitor with casting. With the right line and most 3 pound plus, well, 3.5 pound test curve rods, you'd be able to cast 120 yards, I think, if you can already cast 80, 90 yards now. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a massive caster. I've fished lakes where you have to cast 120, 130, and I've always managed to do it, from my previous best being 80, 90 yards with different equipment. And, you know, I hadn't had any lessons or anything. So as long as, you know, you don't consider yourself like an awful caster and you really struggle with hand-eye coordination, as long as that doesn't apply to you, then you probably can with the right equipment. The main thing being line. I mean, the main thing that made me realise it is when I first started using braid on a marker rod, and I was using Power Pro. It's about £20 braid, which was like the thickness of £4 line or £5 line or whatever it was. And you can lob a marker float and a lead, you know, a distance lead and just a thin stick type marker float. You can lob one of them 130 yards without putting any effort in whatsoever. It just comes off the reel so easy. And that's, you know, and the same sort of lob with the with your rod and 15-pound line or 0.35 line would probably go 80 yards. Yeah, it goes 120 without any effort whatsoever, without even trying to, you know, like a 60% effort cast. So that tells you that it's the resistance of the line coming off the reel. I don't know what sort of line you use, but I would say that is the most important thing. Now, if you're allowed to use leaders and you get a decent 0.28 diameter line. We had this conversation, actually. A lot of people ask us about the P-line, don't we? There's regular threads about P-line, which is what I consider to be the best suited all-round carp line that I've found. It's got the least amount of stretch. It's got the best breaking strain to diameter ratio. But because line is made out of nylon or standard line, it's not actually an ideal material. Like, there is no perfect line. You always have to make a compromise, and that compromise is strength over diameter. If you fished a lake where you had to fish 160 yards, but there wasn't a single snag, rock or anything in the lake, like there was no danger of your line snapping, you'd use 8 pound line with a leader, and that'd be the way you fish, because, like I say, a reasonable lob is going to make is going to get it out. You know, that the distance that you need to get it out. If you've got a lake that's I don't know, 8 acres and the middle's 60 yards, I'd be using 25 pound. And then again, there was no weed or anything. I'd be using like 25 pound X line or something. You know, I'd be using a really heavy fluorocarbon that casts like rubbish, but is going to drop like a stone to the bottom, you know, and leave no line. But like, you have to make a compromise for the situation that you're in. I like the P line because it's only got 6% stretch, whereas most nylons have got about 12%. So if you imagine you're casting 100 yards with 12% stretch, that's 12 yards of stretch, which is quite a lot, as opposed to six yards of stretch with the P line. Now, breaking strains are a bit of a moot point with lines, because most people don't print the true breaking strain, unless your line is IGFA rated, which is like an international standard, unless it, which casting lines have to be, you know, like competition lines, tournament lines and stuff, but there's only a few of those. Most carp lines are not IGFA rated, so basically the manufacturers rate them to sell, and the most common carp line is £15, so you'd be surprised what most £15 lines actually break at. Most of them are over £20, £22 to £24. So the only way to accurately gauge a line and compare them is to use diameter. So what most people think is a standard £15 line is 0.35 diameter, which actually breaks at 20 to 24 sort of pound. But it generally won't snap, you know, it's pretty tough, 0.35. It's going to deal with most situations, you know, it'll deal with your average snag and weed, your average little mussels and snails and stuff that you get in weed, you know, it ain't going to go really easy. As soon as you drop down to lower than 0.28, you are at danger of cutoffs and stuff on sharp rocks and things. So I always use a line somewhere between the two, 0.28 and 0.35. Now, if you do need to cast, and you can use a leader, I'd be looking at a 0.28 line, which is going to break about 14-15 pound breaking strain. Use that and use a leader, and I would say even with the gear you've got now, you'll be casting 100 yards. Then have a look at a tippy rod. I would think the rod makes more difference than the reel. Do you agree, Mark?
Yeah, that's... Well, I'll go give into my opinion on it, but that's probably the only thing I agree with you so far.
Right, go on.
Yeah, I think the technique is a hell of a lot more to do with it than you give credit for.
Although obviously it helps, but like, have you ever done that with a marker rod with super thin line? You can lob it, it goes 120 yards, and I mean, you don't have to have any skill. I'm doing a 50-60% power cast, it still goes 120.
The line does make it. There's, and if you can think of, you know, the long cast is in percentages. Mm. You know, your rod, your reel, your line, your technique, each has a certain amount of percentage. You know, I think, you know, the rod has a lot, the technique has a lot, you know, your line has a bit less, and your reel has a bit less than that.
For me, like, let's say with your setup,
you use a bait boat.
Obviously, that's plan B. But you know, I've spent 30 years casting accurately, pre-bait boats and stuff, and there's lakes you can't use bait boats on, and you know, I can cast accurately to 130 with 0.35 line. But the, like, you're going to make life easier. If the biggest thing is the resistance of your line, that's before anything else. No matter how good you are at casting, if you can cast 60 yards with 0.35 line and you put 0.28 line on, it's going to go 80 yards instead of 60 with the same cast. Like, it's going to increase your cast. But for me, being a really skillful caster, I think most people without training can probably do 100 yards with reasonable tackle and reasonable line. I think the distance in being a really good caster, you know, having really good technique, I think it's marginal up the higher end of the scale. So let's say without any training at all, I taught myself to cast 120 yards without any training. With the right training and the right technique, I might be able to up that to 140, 150 maybe. You know, if I had coaching from the likes of Terry Edmonds or Mark Crutchinson or one of the casting experts, but they're going to increase that natural ability up the higher end. But we rarely need to cast 150. What I'm saying is a normal guy that can probably cast 90 to 100 reasonably comfortable with the right gear is going to be able to cast the 120 that he needs to cast. In this situation, and then yeah, if you need to go that extra bit further, some casting lessons are probably going to be the edge. But I agree, like, it's all a percentage, but I'm saying for your average carp fishing distance, when do we need to go more than 120? Most people can do that with the right equipment, and I think the first bit of that equipment is the line, the second is the rod, and the reel is probably the third bit, as long as you've got a big pit reel. Like, you know, if you're trying to do it on the old bait runner 6010s or whatever with the tiny little spool that you can get about 140 yards on, you're going to really struggle with any rod, you know, you're going to really struggle. But as long as you've got already got a big pit reel, I think the line and the rod are the important things.
Yeah, definitely. But to, you know, go back to Gary's question, we'll break it down from start to finish.
Yeah.
Come.
Right, so getting back to Gary's question, just to break it down from start to finish, so we're not confusing the issue too much.
Yeah.
He starts by saying, you know, mentioning the his tackle tart sensors have been aroused by the new real Shimano brought out. And rightly so, I'll be honest, I saw these down at the Five Lakes show, and they are everything they say they are. They are the mutts nuts, and I was impressed.
Are they the ones at about 150 quid?
150 quid, yeah, minus 1p. And I tell you what, they had some loaded up with line on display, and they're impressive, I'll give them that. I think it's something like the bail arm goes around 50 times for each up and down, which is super slow oscillation. Anyway, before we start sounding like a Shimano advert,
if we talk about a product because it's in the news, people think it's an advert, which I get.
Yeah, no, I was genuinely impressed because, you know, for the price tag, it's a reel that's going to perform as well as reels 2-3 times that. Anyway, I would replace the rods before the reels.
Yeah.
For that extra distance. Just because I am familiar with the Daiwa Black Widows. We sell them in the shop. And they're a good rod. A good rod for the price. But an upgrade will help you more than upgrading the reels. But you can always do the reels at a later date. But I would also go in the technique. I really would. I'll tell you why as well. This takes me back to a tuition I did a few years back on Pit 5 on the A1s. I had a lad called Nick with me, and what I did, you know, with my own rods, blasted out roughly, I know it was roughly about 100 to 110, and I put the line in the clip, and I said to Nick, you're going to be taking it out of there, and he kind of looked at me as if to say, but in half an hour, you know, just getting his technique right, he was hitting the clip and feeling the lead down every time.
Yeah.
And whereas before, I'll tell you what, he had, if I remember rightly, he had some Free Spirit rods of his own, you know, brand new, and he didn't want to really give him too much abuse, you know, for fear of breaking him. He just spent a few quid on them.
Yeah.
So I says, right, we'll use my rods and don't care about breaking them. And we got there. We saw casting out with a technique on his own rods. He's hitting the same distance.
Yeah, it's very hard to break a kart rod with an overhead cast unless you know it's been nicked or damaged or something.
Yeah,
I've
done it.
Yeah, I have broke rods, but I broke one really easy as well with a lob, but it must have been rod that I've been using for ages. It must have just got damaged going in and out of the motor or something. But I know like Terry Edmonds can snap a rod at any given time. He knows different casts that will compress a rod to breaking point. You know, you try and do a pendulum cast with a kart rod, it'll snap every time. He knows how to wind it up, but your standard overhead casts that carp anglers use, it's very difficult to break a carp rod.
Yeah.
And you're surprised how much, until you have to actually cast that extreme range for your ability. It's like, if I haven't fished a lake where you've got to cast a long way for a while, like your first cast go 30, 40 yards short because you forget how hard you actually have to hit it, you know, to get those extra yards. And I know what that lad means, where you know, he's worried about breaking the rods, because that is how it feels at first, you know, especially when you haven't done it for a while, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get your confidence, you go a bit harder and then you get a crack off and you put a leader on, and then you go, shit, I can really hit this rod hard.
Yeah, once you get the confidence, you know you can do it, you've got the confidence to compress that rod, then that's it, you're hitting it every time. But what I will say is, getting the technique right, just go on a YouTube and just put Terry Edmonds casting or Mike Hutchinson casting.
Yeah, there's loads of it in there that will show you the correct technique. You don't have to spend money on it initially, I don't think.
Yeah. But just before we get off this, you know, a slight tangent. Late last year, you know, I got a new set of rods myself. I went from 12-foot 3.5-pound rods to 13-foot 3.5-pound rods. Have you ever used a 13-footer carp rod?
No, I used the 13-foot NRXDs at a couple of shows, you know, when they'd like doing demos on lakes and stuff, but they only had controllers on them, you know, like the big torpedo things.
Bolt machines.
Bolt machines, yeah. So I've never really practiced on a lake that I've been casting, you know, like to really feel the difference.
Yeah, well, with I've got new reels as well, but that's, you know, beside the point. You know, again, with the same line I've used before, I'm fishing the same swims on Icom that I'm familiar with. I know the spots and I know almost to the yard what distance they are, and that extra foot, it makes a hell of a difference. I'm hitting them so much easier. And I was quite nervous about, you know, going to up to 13 foot. I mean, I got some of the Gray's air curves, so I was on the phone to a mate, Ed Betteridge, you know, bending his ear, and he's done the 13 foots for a few years, and he said, oh, get him, mate, is this the great? He even uses them on small waters, and I finally took the plunge, and I'm glad I did. It really does make that difference in the casting if you need to go long range. But it might be the difference is, me and Ed, we're both tall, lanky blokes. I instantly felt comfortable with it because of that as well. But
yeah, helps with zigs as well, zig fishing, longer links and stuff.
Oh, speaking of zigs, have you seen that new Corda magnet thing?
Yeah, I have. We did speak about it a few shows ago, didn't we, when I first saw it on the net. Yeah, we put it, screw it on the end of a bank stick, put it behind you and stick the hook to it. I had concerns about magnetising hooks, whether, I know, like, humans can't feel the magnet force, it's not a sense that we have, but I always wondered if fish can.
Yeah, I remember you know, the paranoia of going into a tackle shop, if they put that little magnetic security strip on the back, you'd not buy that packet of hooks.
Exactly, yeah. I remember when I was fishing Yateley Angling, they had, you know, the strip on the back of the hooks, and they don't magnetise until they, like, desensitise the strip. You know, when you're at the till, they wipe the strip over a big heavy magnet that's under the desk that basically stops it go bleeping when you go out the door. But it was when they wiped it over the magnet that that it magnetised the hook, and then they'd all stick together coming out of the pack, and it done my head in a little bit. So I'd, I know Ruth that was working there, I'd ask her not to swipe him when she done him, and then I did catch single scale not long afterwards. I went in the shop to tell her because I had a few conversations with her about it. I mean, carp, maybe it's a Simon Scott question, but I mean, how would you ever tell if carp react to magnets?
I don't know, he'd have to do a placebo controlled double blind trial.
Yeah, but yeah, Gary Barton, thanks for your question, but well, me and Mark agree on some things. Have a look at your technique on some videos. Do look at changing the rods. I mean, you want a nice 3.5 pound test curve tippy rod. You want something, a tip that recovers fairly quickly, like a fast action tip. Possibly look at 13 footers if you think you can compress them. Not sure if I'd be able to compress a 13 foot rod, but you know, you find a rod that's comfortable for you. But you do want a fast recovery, fast tip. Rod, 3.5 pound test curve, and I'd stick with your reels for now, and do have a look at the line that you're using. You want to fish a sort of the lowest diameter line you can get away with. You're going to be wanting 3.5 to 4 ounce leads for getting that sort of distance, 120 yards. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend a line under 0.35 unless you're using a leader. So yeah, it's kind of done that. Have we got a worth a look?
Worth a look.
Yeah, I've got a worth a look. This is Ian McMillan has just knocked up a little DVD that will be available. I think it's available now, called The Tuition.
Now, yeah, it's basically a DVD of carp tuition. There's a lot of people doing tuitions now, aren't they? And they've put it together in a DVD with Lee Morris, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, Lee Morris has done all the filming and editing, production, and Ian McMillan is, basically showing you how to get on, literally, from start to finish. Now, they do it on Pence Hall in Birmingham, and which is, you know, quite a well-stocked runs water, which is basically typical of the carp water that many people are going to start on.
Yeah.
Which, is a good thing. Because you're doing a tuition, you don't want to just jump on a rock-hard water and try and show you how to get it done. You want to be catching a few. But everything is covered in there, from something as simple as literally spooling your reels up, how to do that correctly. Then the obvious ones, rig, lead circle systems, lead core, your bait. Quite an interesting section on watercraft, which that's an invaluable skill. You know, it can be taught, but it's picked up along the way. you know, you're putting in the right direction. There's so many things that it can give away, so it covers also casting, spotting, feature finding, hardware, and also one of my favourite bits, he has a bit of a talk on backside etiquette, which is something certain data kit waters that I'm probably going to experience this year could do with a bit of. But what it does mention, it is one of my pet peeves as well. People who chuck fag ends on the floor.
Yeah, me too.
That does my head in. It's litter. Take it home.
It is litter. But,
yeah. Do you know what also stuck in my mind after watching this?
Yeah.
Ian McMillan does it mostly in shorts. Yeah. I actually paused it, got close to my TV. I'm sure he shaves his legs. He looks very smooth.
We'll have to ask him next time he's on. Why you're looking at men's legs in such detail, I'm not sure.
You see him at Millen, it's allowed. So, yeah. The tuition DVD, I think it's going out to plenty of tackle shops, and, well, for just $5.99, you're going to learn a lot for the price of half a bag of bait.
Yeah, it's certainly advise that for any beginners. Yeah, it's good. Well done, Ian, and I'm sure we'll get him on at some point to have a chat about it.
Yeah, they do some. I've seen on YouTube they do some outtakes as well, which is quite amusing.
Yeah, I saw those. I saw those posted up. I tell you what, we haven't done for a little while. We haven't done a top trumps, have we?
No, we've had it in the notes, and right, let's go. We're zeroing the scores again now. If we've not done it for a while, we're resetting.
No, all I know is you're losing. And whose pick is it?
I can't remember, so it must be mine.
Okay, what are you picking?
I'm picking, because we're on the Carp Water venue top trumps. We're going for two, well-stocked, possibly, you know, a tad controversial day ticket gaffs. I'm going to pick Home Fed.
Okay, well, I don't know much about Home Fen, so
I can lie then.
I'm going to pick The Monument.
Cap, top trumps.
Which is obviously another day ticket type water. So what we do, if you haven't heard this before, we pick five categories, we score them out of 10, so there's a maximum of 50 points for each one. It's like the old top trumps you used to play when you're a kid, where you try and beat the other person in each category. So biggest fish in the lake, the lake record we'll do the overall stock, we'll do the difficulty, we'll do the amenities that you get at the venue, and we'll do the price. We normally do the price per 24 hours is what we normally work it out, don't we? That's how we've been doing it.
It is, yeah.
Okay, so let me get some sort of note-taking device.
I've just got my phone out, so I'm going to take my own notes, because I'm not sure you've been quite honest, because I'm not counting notes. I'm going to count myself as well.
All right, well, you do it then. You can do the adding up this week. Okay, lake record of Home Fen is?
It is the biggest fish I noticed was 56.5 pound.
That's a pretty large fish.
That's okay. A great big lump.
Yeah, for a day ticket venue, it's got to be a 10, isn't it?
I think so. There's not many day ticket lakes that can boast mid-50s.
No, for sure. Monument?
Monument? Ah, I believe that is £44.5.
Wow, that seems small for the Monument. I mean, I've had 40s in a lot of years. I know the Avenue next door has got a couple of 50s. No, it's done a couple of 50s.
I did the research on this. I can't remember if I read Lake Record or your biggest current fish in the lake. But either way, it's not 56.
Okay. I mean,
still big for a day ticket lake, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of day ticket lakes with bigger fish than 44 these days, though. You know, all the Oxford lakes, Christchurch probably got 10 fish bigger than that. I mean, it's probably got to be a 7, hasn't it, I would say, for the Monument.
Yep, I'm happy with that, and I think I'm just going to quit while I'm ahead now.
Okay, it's going to be hard to come back from a 3-point deficit in one category, but we'll see. The overall stock of the lake, the monument, what's in there?
The monument is what I got. Holds over 300 carp in 8 acres, 79 carp over 30 pounds, and at least 4 over 40. Now, was it a couple of years back they actually drained and worked the lake so they could tell exactly to the individual figure, what's in there?
Yeah. That's a decent stock, though. You know, it's got to be an 8, that one.
Yeah, I'm happy with an 8. Now, home fen.
Yeah.
200 fish, with over half the stock being 30-plus. They estimate there is 30-plus fish over 40 pound in there.
Wow. I mean, where do they all come from? I mean, it's in recent years this place has come around. Did they stock it years ago and just feed them up, or do you know the background?
I don't know, to be honest. But reading between the lines, I think they have, I don't know if they're imports or been bred in this country and bred on, but I'm pretty certain they have been stocked in there large, because when you see the pictures of this lake, which was on the Shimano DVD, it was on the Fox one, you know, it doesn't look like a pit that is, you know, surrounded with trees and, you know, 40 years of nature taking back over.
Right.
Which is why I said at the beginning, it's, you know, they are maybe, you know, a tad controversial, because I have heard, you know, both of these lakes, you know, slated and called them fake lakes in canned carping, but whatever you call them, they are filling a gap. They are both full, and I'd happily cast into both of them.
30 fish over 40 pounds, that's pretty ridiculous, and half the stock over 30. How big is the lake, do you know?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't think it's monstrous.
Wow. I mean, you've got to give it a 10, haven't you? I would say, for that stock.
Yeah, you're going for another 7. I'll give you an 8. I'll
be generous. It's worth an 8, that one, for sure. Difficulty.
I think they both can be, you know, tricky on the day.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that home fen is small with 200 fish in it. I can't see how tricky that can be.
Well, the monument, 8 acres with 300 carp.
Yeah, I don't think that's particularly tricky either. I don't know. So, I mean, how do we score it? I mean, the more difficult it is, surely the lower it scores, being a day ticket lake. We want, you want a catfish, pumps, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no information about how difficult these are, so we're going to have to score them the same, aren't we?
Yeah, 8 and 8.
Yeah, okay. 8 and 8. Amenities then, what facilities are at the monument?
At the monument, these are the facilities I found. There's a couple of disabled swims, fishery lodge selling a range of baits, a cafe run by outside caterers, toilets, a power shower, 24-hour CCTV, so you're nice and secure, toilets. Well, I've got HF. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going a bit too far.
That's all. Yep. Looks pretty decent. Disabled swims, you know, you can buy bait and stuff there. A cafe run by people that run cafes, and all the showers, and it's very secure. So I mean, I know the actual nature around Old Rob Hales' lakes is fantastic as well, aren't they? I mean, Shropshire's a beautiful place. So I mean, that's got to be a 9, I would say, for the facilities there and the amenities.
Can't argue with that. And it's a home fen. They are toilets, there's security, it's a secure site, and there's big swims.
That sounds like a 7 to me.
A 7, that's a generous 7, I think.
6.5.
No, we'll go a 6.
Yeah, I mean, there's toilets. It's, I mean, toilets and big swims, that's basically no facilities, isn't it? I mean, you would expect a toilet on a day ticket lake.
Yeah, but when you think of like, so the facilities are somewhere like, what would we do? You know, Bluebell, where there was like a big tackle shop and showers and.
Yeah.
You know, that was up there as 10.
Okay, let's do the prices then. The monument. Prices. That's it. It's £60 for 36 hours. Now, we work things out on a 24-hour basis, so...
This is where I found out there's a minimum session on there, and the same with Home Fen. You have to book 48 hours, which is £80.
Yeah, but for terms of comparing it to all the other lakes that we've done, we need to work out the equivalent price in 24 hours, don't we? So
yeah, they both work out at £40 for 24 hours.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they both work out exactly the same. Which is, they are both the most expensive day ticket lake we've had so far, aren't they?
So is there any more expensive you can think of?
Possibly not at the minute. We maybe find some on some future podcast, but and probably Kevin Nash's at some point, but let's not go down there. It's going to
be a different setup entirely.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to score both a six for that.
Yeah, I think we can.
Cool. Well, I'm pretty convinced you've won, but get adding.
Yeah. Right. I'll be honest now. Writing articles is easy. I find the written English quite good. I cannot add up. That is not my strong point. So, 20, 34. Well, I've scored 40.
40 out of possible 50. That's fairly high.
And then you've scored less.
Not many less. It's got to be close, this.
Yeah, it is close. Oh, I don't like odd numbers.
All right, well, I won't put you through the pain of it. You can have this one. So this week's Carp Top Trumps champion is Home Fen.
Carp Top Trumps.
Every week we do a What's Upcoming in Carp Talk. Because we should be releasing on a Saturday, although it's going to be Sunday when you get this, but on a Saturday comes the digital version of Carp Talk. It's only £1.49 and you get it from pocketmags.com. You can view it on any device, Apple, Android, PC, your MacBook, whatever. As usual, the printed version comes out on a Tuesday, but what's in there this week, Mark?
There's some good stuff as usual. There's exciting news of a massive new TV deal for angling. Mm. Which has got me intrigued because I have not got a clue where it is as we sat recording now.
We're going to have to buy it, aren't we?
We are, definitely. I've got a subscription anyway, so I'll just download the latest one.
I'm going to make a prediction for this month's edition as well. Well, this week's edition. I guarantee there'll be a £50 from Wellington in there.
Yeah, guess what?
What? There's a £50 from Welly?
Yeah, for Kevin Ralph.
Yeah, place is ridiculous.
50 a week.
That would win a Top Trumps, wouldn't it, if it was a day ticket?
Oh, Syndicate Top Trumps will have to do.
Yeah, what else is going on in there?
Yeah, we've got The Avenue, Tarka, which is a £50 common, 56. It's one of the biggest commons in the country. That's from The Avenue, one of Rob Hale's lakes. And I believe it's got its name after it was attacked in the past by an otter. It survived and... keeps growing.
Yes, very large carp. That is a very large carp. It did a big 50 before The Avenue as well, didn't it? But I think that one died. But yeah, that tarka is a huge fish. What else?
Several 50s in there, but there's a new lake record for NS Fisheries Water West Stowe. If you want to know how big it is, you'll have to buy it. We also explain why there is an even bigger incentive to win this year's BCAC. They're getting very mysterious with these notes and figures, aren't they? I'm thinking there must be some big prize money coming there.
Yeah, and they're teasing you to get the magazine. We can't give all the info away here. I've got the usual features in there. There's a feature from Kevin Nash. He's talking about alarms and stuff and badly used bobbins and how to increase your catch rate. They have a look at the fantastic show at Five Lakes, carping on. It was last weekend. Ben Wells visits stunning East Midlands venue, Trent View Carp Fishery, to get some of the fishing. Have a look at that. And they've got the usual competition, haven't they, Mark?
Yep, ton of Signet tackle, bankware products and splash mats and bank sticks, buzz bars, bobbins to give away. And I could tell we sell it in the shop and it's all cracking gear.
I didn't win the Summit one from the other week, unfortunately.
No, I might enter this one, to be honest. They're
The bobbins are actually quite nice, old school and tarty looking.
So grab your carp tool, you get it online from pocketmags.com for all your devices, or get to your local shop. There's a stockist locator on the Carp Talk website, comes out every Tuesday. Go and order it from your local newsagents and check it out. Well, that's about it. Hopefully we'll have been fishing. I might even see if we can get an on the bank in session for next week's show, as I hope to catch some fish this week, getting out with my pal for a few days. So yeah, hopefully it's all going to go well.
And, yeah, I think it will. You've had a flying start. You know, I know a few people this year, they've all had a flying start, and I'm stuck in my starting blocks. Yeah. I need to pull my finger out.
You have to go fishing to catch fish.
That is true. I need to shake this Ebola off and get on the bank.
Cool. Until next week, we'll see you later.
www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offers.